This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
What up, everybody? This is Spencer, and you are listening to my dad and his Handgun World podcast. The reason he carries a gun is because he can't carry a cop.
Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Well, this is episode 230, and I guess my son agrees with me too. That was him in the introduction there. He agrees that I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. How cool is that? Well, for this 230th episode, I had a chance to interview John Payne from Suarez International. John's one of my fellow instructors, and we talked about, are you fit to fight? You know, physical fitness is not something I've ever covered on the Handgun World podcast. I've talked a little bit about it over at today's survival show, the show I do on prepping and survivalism, but I've never covered it here. Now, we have to understand something, and I want to share this with you and see if you agree. A fight is going to be full of movement. It's going to be a situation where you're trying not to get killed, and you're probably going to be moving and moving very aggressively. At least I hope. And so the question is, are you fit to be able to do that? What if you have to move a long way? What if you have to get behind cover? What if you have to defend yourself hand to hand? Are you too slow? Are you not too slow? Are you strong enough or not? If it's hand-to-hand combat first, or if he's got a drop on you with a gun or a knife, do you know what to do? And are you fit to handle it? So, John Payne's one of the most physically fit people that I know. And he's been doing a really good job with that. And for those of you who have taken his class, you know, you probably know what I'm talking about. And I think he's lost quite a bit of weight since the last 2 or 3 months or so. And he's going to talk a little bit about that. So, we have a discussion on how to stay fit to fight. This program or this episode is a little bit of a departure from guns, okay? Hope you don't mind. It's a little bit of a departure from the actual subject of guns, but it's about fighting. It's about being fit to fight, and I really think you're going to enjoy it, and I think it's a very, very important topic. Now, recently there's been a little bit of criticism that has come my way that I want to talk about. I don't mind criticism, folks. I just want to tell you that I take criticism constructively. There have been a couple of occasions, okay, I'll admit, there's been a couple of occasions that I've taken it personally and I've apologized for it. But I don't take criticism personally. I normally take it constructively. So you're more than welcome to go ahead and send me an email, Facebook message, voicemail, whatever. Thumbs up, thumbs down, or whatever you want to say, I'm going to take it constructively. I want this podcast to be as good as I can make it. But a couple things have come my way recently, and I want to share it with you. And I'm not even going to mention names. These people pretty much know who they are, but I'm not going to single somebody out in public. But I'm confused about something. One guy put a message on my Facebook page saying that he quit listening to my show because I was complaining too much about IDPA rules. This was back in the early days of the show. And he said I was doing too much whining and complaining about not being able to load magazines to full capacity and some of the silly rules. I think I even did a whole podcast on the silly rules of IDPA. Now, IDPA just recently came out with a new rule book, and the new rules are going to be effective October 1st. And one of my comments that I made on Facebook was just simply that, hey, what took them so long? You know, what took them so long to put Springfield XD pistols in the division that they belong? They belong in the stock service pistol division. And I think it was a big mistake on IDPA's part to put them in there. I know that Springfield advertised it as a single action gun. I get that. But it's a striker fired production pistol. And it should have been an SSP from the beginning. But it was really not, I wasn't trying to slam IDPA. It's just that the last rule book was 2005. This rule book is 2013. Too bad that they waited 8 years. Anyway, this person said, well, you know, they quit listening to my show because I whined too much about IDPA. I just want to say something, okay? Based on the emails that I've received over the last 3.5 years of doing this podcast, It seems to me that a lot of people have gotten involved in IDPA, in part because of what I've talked about on my show. I've helped motivate them to get into IDPA. I'm flattered by that. I'm a huge supporter of IDPA, ladies and gentlemen. I still compete in IDPA, very occasionally USPSA. I still encourage every one of you who is listening to this podcast to get involved in the competition shooting sports. There's a great value in competition. Not a month goes by where I don't get an email from somebody that says that they shot their first IDPA match and they wanted to tell me about it. It is because of my show that, you know, they went and did it. So I kind of find it pretty interesting that somebody would quit listening to me because I whine and complain about IDPA when I'm one of the biggest IDPA proponents out there. All right, anyway, I will say this about people who have quit listening to my show. It's a free podcast. You're entitled to a full money-back refund for every dollar that you paid to listen to my free podcast. I know that's a little bit of sarcasm there, but I really hope that you get at least one good pearl of wisdom from every podcast. So I had another guy that said that he couldn't make it through more than 20 minutes of my recent point shooting podcast, where I reviewed Roger Phillips's point shooting class that I took and Ben Branham and 14 other people took. He said he couldn't make it through more than 20 minutes of a 51-minute podcast because I was picking on and I was, you know, criticizing people who put down point shooting. Okay? Well, you know, and he said he was a big proponent of point shooting, and he was kind of looking forward to my objective review, but stopped listening after 20 minutes. Well, you know, in that podcast, I did go on to give a review, an honest review of the class, and what I thought of the techniques, and how I thought that they would apply to civilian concealed carry and civilian defense, and even competition shooting. So I would just ask one thing of you folks. You know, I know you're not going to agree with everything I say, and I don't want you to agree with everything I say. But you know what? Before rendering an opinion on the podcast, why don't you listen to the whole thing? If you shut it off less than halfway through, I think it's kind of tough to render an opinion on the show. It's kind of like, you know, several months ago, a guy reviewed half of a Suarez International course. Not one that I taught, one that somebody else taught. He went to one day of the class, and he all of a sudden reviewed the whole course. And of course, it was a negative review. Well, how do you render a negative review on an entire course when you only went to half of it? Huh? I don't know. It's weird. Hey, you know what, folks? I listen to a lot of podcasts. And I do not agree with everything I hear on other podcasts, but I listen to the whole show before I render an opinion. Okay, anyway, a couple of things. That's all I wanted to say. Ben Branham and I have already taught our rifle course. I've got Suarez International's close-range gunfighting coming up May 18th and 19th. I guess I need to go back to Promotion 101 because John Payne is kicking my butt. He's got his class almost sold out, and I've got very few. So I guess I need to go to the John Payne School of Promoting Suarez International. Congratulations, John. He's doing his Houston-based class at the same time I'm doing mine in San Antonio. There's still time and there's still room if you want to sign up for that. We have a lot of participation in the four-hour skill-building workshop that me and Ben are doing. Ben and I are teaching a four-hour skill-building workshop Saturday, July 13th in San Antonio. We're going to work on reloads, clearing malfunctions, moving and shooting, and then we're going to do a lot of steel. We're going to have a steel shooting contest. I think you're going to like it. I think it's probably going to be a man-on-man steel shooting contest, and you're going to love it. So for $75 for 4 hours, you can't beat that to work on three skills, three very important skills, and then have a whole bunch of fun shooting steel. It's probably going to be 2 hours of training and 2 hours of fun. So you can go to handgunworld.com, sign up for that. And, of course, our level two of the Beyond Concealed Carry coming up very soon. And, by the way, we've added a new special to Shooters Club. Between the time you hear this podcast, which is going to release on May 18th, okay, it's going to release on, no, May 11th. What am I saying? May 12th. Sunday, May 12th. This, I forgot my dates, folks. Anyway, a new promo. Anybody who buys a Shooters Club membership is going to get a free ticket. Not everybody. I'm losing this. I'm blowing this, folks. We're gonna expand the drawing to a free ticket to any course that Ben Branham and I are teaching for the 2013 year. Okay. So, and by the way, White Dog Holsters, Devin at White Dog Holsters, he makes terrific outside the waistband Kydex. If you want a good concealable outside the waistband Kydex holster that's really good for training, White Dog Holsters, he's going to make a mag pouch and a holster for a winner in the Shooters Club as well. So we're giving away two holsters, a belt, and a class that Ben Branham and I are teaching, 250 rounds of ammunition, and gosh, I'm probably forgetting something. Go to the Shooters Club page at handgunworld.com, and you'll see everything that we're giving away. There's a drawing on July 4th, and there's another one on June 1st. It's a $75 membership. Oh, and above all, you get terrific video and audio content that Ben Branham and I have put together. And there's some really cool interviews on that. Okay, that's enough. So here comes John Payne from Suarez International on Are You Fit to Fight? My guest is John Payne from Suarez International. Welcome back, John.
Hey, thanks for the invite, Bob.
No problem. Well, you know, my fellow Suarez International instructor, and I wanted to get you on here to talk about fitness. You know, I would say probably out of all the SI people, you're one of the top most fit instructors.
I wouldn't go that far, Bob. We've got some really heavy hitters on our team, and I took a lot of motivation and inspiration from my teammates to get where I am right now, and I've still got a ways to go.
Well, I do too. I've taken several classes from you, and the last time I saw you, you were in pretty good shape. You've lost a significant amount of weight lately, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm right at 40 pounds that I've taken off since December 1st.
Congratulations.
It's been a lot of hard work and consistency. Consistency is the big thing with it. And really, well, and we'll talk more about this later, but taking baby steps and not getting discouraged.
Yeah, well, you know, being fit is such an important part of being able to fight, and there's so many people that focus so much on the gun. You know, it's all about the gun. It's all about their ability to shoot. And, you know, the more classes I take, the more training I get involved in, the more I realize that your mobility and your fitness plays a huge role. Let's start with that. Talk about why you think it's important to be fit.
Well, you know, one of the first examples I think of is one that I saw Gabe type write years ago about, you know, what good does it do you to be able to shoot dime-sized groups at 100 yards with your rifle that you get up from the bench and walk down to your target and, you know, fall over a heart attack because your body can't handle the strenuous activity. Does you know that at all?
you're huffing and puffing just trying to go check out your target, right?
And unfortunately, there's a large part of the shooting community, no pun intended, that's all they tend to do is shoot from the bench, and they get very little physical exercise. I've even known people like that in law enforcement that, you know, I never could quite understand how they had the discipline to follow the fundamentals so well and be such excellent marksmen, but, you know, couldn't run 300 yards. And one of the running jokes was, you know, you can't shoot everybody.
Yeah, you have to be able to get away.
Or you have to be able to catch them.
Or, yeah, a good point. You know, I think it's important for people who are brand new listening to my show, it's important to let people know you are a law enforcement officer also in the state of Texas. Let people know a little bit about what you do if you can.
Well, I've been a patrolman for a municipal department. I've been a part-time patrolman for a smaller community. I've been a deputy constable, primarily serving civil process and evictions, things of that nature. And I'm currently a deputy sheriff in Southeast Texas, and I work for what's called the support division. I'm a transport deputy, and then certain times throughout each month, I serve warrants. And so it's a nice little change up. Some people may recognize a transport deputy as being an extradition officer. If you have a suspect that's in custody in another jail or another state, and they need to answer charges in my county in one of our courts, then we go and get them and bring them back. And, you know, I've gone so far, I think my furthest trip has been Florida to go and pick someone up and bring them back.
Yeah. Okay, well, good. Thanks for that background. So let's get back to being fit to fight. You know, it's amazing because you mentioned that, and it's very true. You know, you have to be able to either catch them, you have to be able to run away. So much of the training that SI teaches and even other schools teach, so much of it is based around being able to move. Being able to move your body, get off the X, being able to move out of the line of fire, and also being able to move and shoot. And I've often wondered how some people that come through the training can actually pull some of that stuff off.
Well, some of them do better than others, but you've been in the same classes that I've taught, and you've co-taught some classes with me where you've seen that some people could not complete the entire course. They would have to go get a breather and cool off a little bit so they could complete the course. I try really hard to watch people that look like they have a problem with their physicality. The last thing that I want when I'm teaching a class is someone to be hurt or injured because they're not physically up to the task.
Yeah, but and that's good. But let's all remember something too. You know, a fight is a dirty, nasty event, and you know, let's face it, none of us, we don't want to get shot. I think being able to avoid getting shot is probably more important or just as important as being able to return fire and be accurate with your fire. And you mentioned earlier people that just kind of sit behind a bench or sit on a chair with their rifle and concentrate on getting those sub 1-inch groups, or they're just standing there with their handgun plinking. You know, if they're engaged in a real fight, can they physically get through it? That's my major concern for some people.
Well, with all the stressors that are going to come into play in a situation like that, the better physical condition that you're in, the better that your body is able to adapt and deal with that stress. If you have never done anything physical, and our society is getting to be more and more where the primary work that's done is behind a desk, you know, on a keyboard, seated, you tend to develop that successful lifestyle body.
Good way to put it. So what types of fitness activity, what kinds of fitness training do you suggest that people get involved in that want to better defend themselves?
Well, the first thing I would suggest, especially if they're over 40 years of age, is to consult with their family physician before they start anything.
That's good.
If you haven't seen your doctor recently and you're going to start some physical activity, you may have some problems that you're just not aware of that can be aggravated by the physical activity. A lot of men, especially men 40 or over, you know, high blood pressure, a lot of times due to their weight or just due to genetics. There's things that they need to check out first before they begin an exercise routine.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
You don't want to jump into it cold turkey.
No, you don't want to do that, and you don't want to be doing things that you shouldn't be doing that your doctor doesn't give you the okay to do. That's a good point.
You know, with the insurance that I've got now, I'm looking at about $35 for a copay for an office visit, and that's $35 well spent.
Absolutely. And, you know, even if you don't have insurance, if you have to pay $100 to your doctor for an office visit to talk to him about this kind of stuff, that's probably money well spent as well.
Yeah, it's probably better than $5,000 in the emergency room.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, what I like to say first is I'm not a fitness expert. Okay. But I have, you know, been around the game for a while, and, the thing about the baby steps, you know, you just can't go out and say, well, when I was 16, I could run a mile and a half in 12 minutes, so I'm going to set my timer and run and see how far I can make it. Not really a good way to address it. Like I said, the first thing you should do is consult your physician and make sure that you don't have any pre-existing problems that you're going to need to work around or work with. The first thing is scheduling time for yourself. This is kind of like working your finances, Bob. Mm-hmm. My parents taught me as I was coming up and would do chores around the house and yard work and things of that nature, and I got my allowance. They would talk to me about the priorities of your finances. You know, that you need to put this amount back for your church. You need to put this amount of back for yourself.
I'm glad they taught you that.
I think you've heard this before about paying yourself first.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a firm believer in that.
Okay. Well, it's a similar thing when you're scheduling time for fitness. You've got to make time for yourself. Because if you don't do it now, then you're not going to have the quality of life later on to enjoy your children, your grandchildren, retirement, things of that nature. When I finally retire, I don't want to be laid up somewhere on an oxygen bottle. You know, when I retire, I want to be fit. When my time comes, you know, I either want it to be in a blaze of glory or in my sleep, one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to linger. So what can I do to mitigate certain risks? Well, cardio is a great thing. And you can address this in several ways. You can do diet, and I know this ugly D word, and you can do exercise. And you're going to see some progress with either one. But where you really see the large gains is when you combine the two.
Yeah, I think diet's probably the biggest part of it, but then combining it with the exercise, it just makes it that much better. So what do you do? Tell people what you do.
Well, what I've started doing, I've been doing it, like I said, for the past 5 months, is I do cardio and strength training 3 days a week, and I practice Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu right now twice a week, beginning to do that 3 times a week.
Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, okay.
Mm-hmm. The cool thing about the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is that I don't get bored. And every moment you're on the mat, you're working at least, you know, 2 or 3 muscle groups, especially your core.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you cannot use your abdominal muscles, you're going to be way behind the curve in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah, it seems like most of the martial arts, you know, pick one. I mean, they're all going to be fairly good at getting you well-conditioned.
In different ways, yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, and part of this is you have to be able to let go of your ego as well. I've had some buddies that said, well, you know, I used to go to the gym and lift all the time, but now I'm not near as strong as I used to be. I've gotten kind of flabby, and I haven't got much sun. You know, if I take off if I don't wear a long sleeve shirt, I might blind people in there, things of that nature. You know, I don't look good in shorts. You have to let go of the ego.
Yeah, you do.
Okay. So, you know, what can you do to increase your strength? Well, you know, for me, with a martial arts background, any kind of stand-up martial art, you know, I had a natural ability, natural talent. It came very easy to me. When I began studying Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with Cliff Hargrave, who's a black belt under Royce Gracie, I found out, man, I didn't take to this the same way I did to Shorinru or Taekwondo or Goju or something of that nature, the different hard and soft style martial arts. This is a foreign ground, foreign material. And, you know, just because you were advanced in one system doesn't mean that you'll automatically, you know, just take right to the next one, especially if it's completely different than what you've done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So letting go of the ego, strapping back on the white belt, because, you know, even instructors always are students. And you just put on the student attitude, and you get out there, and you empty your mind and open your ears and begin working with what you're taught.
Yeah, and I think putting the ego away is an important thing. I also think that people need to make first of all, they need to understand the importance of being fit. You know, why be fit? What's the disadvantage of being overweight and not being able to move if you're in a fight?
Bob, 40 pounds ago, I was miserable. I didn't want to believe I was miserable.
Uh-huh.
I didn't look in the mirror and see the same thing that somebody else saw when they looked at me. It wasn't until I saw a picture of me doing some instruction with another student, I thought, man, I have really packed it on. I didn't even recognize myself at first.
Yeah, I've been there.
And I thought, wow, I've got to make a change. And my first reaction was, man, how did I let myself go this far? Number two, have I gone so far that I can't find my way back?
Ah, interesting point.
That was a real fear. I was like, man, I am so far behind the curve that this is just useless. I'm just stuck like this.
That's it. Okay. Interesting.
And it took a lot of a perseverance, a lot of prayer and encouragement from my friends to say, you know what, I can change this.
And you have. Congratulations. I mean, you've done extremely well.
But I started out with small steps. I started out with a treadmill that I bought for my wife. I'm going to get on the treadmill, and I'm going to set it at 3.5 miles an hour, and I'm going to stay on this thing for 30 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. Started doing that on a daily basis. And you know what? I can handle this. I can do this. I'm going to turn it up a little bit. I'm going to turn it up to 4 miles an hour, and I'm going to stay on it for 40 minutes.
Okay.
And, I would combine that with, I like looking at some of the classified ads.
Mm-hmm.
And especially under sports equipment or fitness equipment. And there's people out there that'll tell you that if you're not using free weights, then you're just spinning your wheels, you're wasting your time.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
You know, it all depends on what your end goal is. The bottom line is that unless something drastic happens, I will never look like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well, and you don't really have to either.
And I'll never look like Lou Ferrigno.
You don't have to.
No, you don't have to. But at the same time, what they attained is not my goal. My goal is to be able to run and breathe. My goal is to be able to lift at least my own body weight.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason I said that some people say that if you're not using free weights and you're just spinning your wheels is because there's other options out there. And the one that I looked at was a guy was selling a Bowflex.
Mm-hmm.
And I had tried some before. The issue that I had was that the majority of them come with, let's just call it pounds of resistance, because it's not true measured weight, in my opinion. But the ones that came with 210 pounds of resistance, it wasn't enough resistance for me to get a good workout from it.
Okay.
I could max out that machine and sit there and, you know, pump out 30 reps.
Yeah, well, that's not good, because if you got it maxed out, you're not getting a workout, then it's not going to, at some point, it's not going to help you much.
Right. You've got to balance the weight and the reps to where you're, you know, you look at it like this. This is oversimplified, but the lighter the weight, the higher reps, the more definition that you'll get. The heavier the weight with a moderate amount of reps is for building.
Yeah, and I'm more of a lightweight, lots of reps kind of guy. Sometimes when I go to the gym, I'm only doing 10 pounds, but I'm doing a lot of reps, and I'm concentrating on form, and I'm concentrating on technique so that I get the most out of it.
Well, yeah, you can put more weight on there than you can effectively work out with. And if you use sorry form and horrible technique, You know, you'll think that you're really doing something, but sometimes you're doing more harm than you're doing good.
Yeah, I want to share this with people. A few years back, about 5 years ago, I paid $600 to a personal trainer. And maybe I didn't need to do that, but in my opinion, that was some of the best money I had ever spent. He worked with me for about 12 weeks, and he actually wrote out a plan for me. And he was a real big believer in lightweight, lots of reps, good form, and that you'll get in better shape that way than anything else. And I believe him. It worked for me.
One of the things that I've started looking at is not using any weights at all.
You're just using your body weight?
Using exercises that just use your own body weight, your own body's resistance.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And once again, not a fitness expert, but from all the athletes that I've seen, some of the strongest athletes are gymnasts.
Oh, yeah?
And they work with their own body weight.
That's right, they do, yeah.
And you can even go on YouTube and do a search on some of these guys that are 50 and 60 years old that will go out into the yard, so to speak, and pump out 120 dips. You're like, man, the guy, he's got a body of a 25-year-old and he's, you know, pushed 60.
Yeah.
The nice thing about using your own body's weight and resistance for strength training is it does a lot less damage to your joints.
Yeah, that's true. So, John, why is all this stuff important for people that carry a gun?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny for me because we're kind of staying off of the training aspects, what I'm used to talking about. This is more of a lifestyle topic. And the reason that this is so important is for having a full and enjoyable life.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen anybody that was, you know, obese, limited in mobility, that really seemed like they were happy?
No, not really.
I mean, I got to the point to where I was thinking about buying Velcro shoes.
Oh, no.
Because you know, when you bend over to tie those laces, you just start to get out of breath. And I thought, this is ridiculous.
It's about time to make a change if you're thinking about Velcro shoes.
Right. If the waist of your pants has more inches than your inseam, you either got really stubby legs or you need to make a change.
That's a good way to put it. Well, here's my thoughts. Tell me what you think. You know, a lot of people think, well, all I'm going to have to do is just draw my gun and fire two, three times, four times maybe, and that's the end of the fight. Well, if you're outnumbered, if there's two or three people attacking you, you need to try to either fight to cover, get to cover, or it's 3-on-1 or it's 2-on-1. Somewhere along the line there, John, I think it's going to be a physical encounter. Don't you think?
Well, you know, like we were talking earlier, the first equation is, are you fit to fight? The second part of that equation is, can you fight to win?
Yeah, oh, good.
And there's a lot of things that go into that, but one of the first things you look at is, what kind of environment have you placed yourself into where there's a possibility that you're going to be attacked by three or four people?
Well, yeah, I mean, you really never know when that could happen, though.
You never know, but it generally doesn't happen at the grocery store.
You know, it generally doesn't happen at the grocery store, and you might have put yourself in the bad situation.
In that parking lot.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean that it can't happen. But, you know, the majority of the assault victims that I've taken reports from have usually been nearby someplace that serves adult beverages for on-premise consumption.
And they shouldn't have been there in the first place.
You know, there's places that are just dumb for you to go, especially when you get to be our age. There's not a whole lot of reason to go there. If somebody wants to, that's their business. It doesn't fit into my lifestyle.
Does that kind of play into don't do stupid things in stupid places with stupid people?
At stupid times.
Yeah, that's right.
It's amazing how much disorder that you can cut from your life if you follow the 4S rules.
Well, that's true.
Anyway, getting back to my routine, the cardio either consists of an hour on the treadmill or taking my dog around the neighborhood for an hour or so and, sprinting, jogging, walking, kind of mapping out, okay, this certain block, three laps around this block is 1 mile, run the straightaways, walk the curves, run the straightaways, jog the curves, sprint the straightaways, just kind of mixing it up. And the little bulldog kind of motivates me because he loves to run.
You know, that's a good idea for people that have active dogs. If you let them, your dog can help you get a really good workout, can't they?
They can help you get a good workout, and it also helps their well-being as well. My little bulldog is the happiest after he's had a good romp and exercise or rope tug. And we actually do strength training. I got some nice size rope that's been tied into knots, and he'll grab one end and I'll grab the other. And we'll just tug on this thing for about 15 or 20 minutes till we're both wore out.
That's good.
But the Bowflex that I purchased, I upgraded it to 410 pounds of resistance. And I thought, man, where am I going to start on this thing? Well, it came with this little DVD, and I played it, and it had what they call the total body workout. Mm-hmm. And all it basically is circuit training. I started out with 5 minutes of aerobic rowing, and then go straight into the bench press, and from the bench press to tricep extensions, and from tricep extensions to crunches, and from crunches to curls, and from curls to lateral arm raises. And inside of 30 minutes, you work just about all of your muscle groups, and doing each one for about 12 reps, and keeping a log of how much resistance I use, and then turning around and checking my improvements as it get, got too easy to do 12 reps with 210 pounds. Well, let's do 12 reps with 220 pounds. See how that feels. And just like I said, incremental steps, but being consistent and saying, okay, this day I'm doing cardio and strength training. On the following day, it's jiu-jitsu, and jiu-jitsu is an hour of practicing techniques and about 30 minutes of rolling on the mat. In that 30 minutes, you may roll with four or five different partners.
Yeah.
But you roll with somebody on the mat for, 5 minutes, and you're sucking air.
Yeah.
It's strenuous activity. There's been several mornings that I've gotten up feeling like I've been hit by a freight train.
Yeah, I'm sure about that.
And, you get up, you take your shower, pop a couple of Tylenol, and go to work.
Tylenol or ibuprofen can be a good friend.
Right. The reason I say Tylenol is because I can't take aspirin or anything that resembles aspirin. It's pretty mild pain reliever, and takes kind of the edge off of some of those sore aches and stuff. But the more that you do it, you notice that you after a while, the next day you're not as sore as you were before. But you're going to take some lumps. If you're not prepared to take some lumps, then you're really going to get discouraged.
Yeah. Well, your routine's a good one. Man, I'm tired just listening to you here, John, but my routine is a lot more tame than yours. But I do get there. I do get to the gym or do something physical on purpose for about three or four days a week on the average.
Yeah, I tell you what, 3 days a week from what my physician told me is good for maintenance.
Yep.
Once you attain a certain level, 3 days a week, about 30 minutes a session, is good maintenance. But in order to get where you want to be, you have to do a little more than that. You're looking at 5 days a week and 30 minutes a minimum each time.
Well, let me get your comment on this, because before we started talking, I pulled up Gabe Suarez's post on this back in October on Warrior Talk News, which is entitled Fit to Fight. And he summarizes at the end, and this is what I think is pretty good. I'm going to go ahead and link to this in the show notes. He says the most important issues are this. Number one, do something physical every day. Number two, stay fresh on your exercises and don't go beyond what's reasonable. Number three, variety rules, which you've kind of talked about that. Number four, very important, cut out the smokes and the sweets and the excess beer. And number five, depending on your age and physical condition, prioritize anaerobic and strength and aerobic as needed, which you've talked about. And number six, I love, eat like a warrior, not like Jabba the Hutt.
Oh, true that. True that. And I'll tell you, we all have our vices. We all have our weaknesses. And we've got an Italian food place. I think you've eaten there with me before.
I have. It's very good.
And they make the best homemade hamburger pizza with jalapenos that I just love.
Oh, yeah. That sounds good.
And
that's Jabba the Hutt food.
Well, yeah, and that used to be our Pizza the Hutt. That was at one time a weekly thing for me, wanting to get that pizza. And once you start putting the work in and you start seeing results, you really start weighing, man, do I really want to eat that? What is that going to do to the workout that I did yesterday?
I think you can ruin an entire workout with one meal.
Well, I don't look at it like that, Bob, because we're all imperfect creatures in an imperfect world. If you dwell on what you ate 2 hours ago, it's easy to get into the poor me type attitude and then turn around and screw up again at your next meal.
Yeah.
Okay. So, say you do, eat that triple cheeseburger with bacon, jalapenos, and mayo and all that stuff, and you think, man, I just ate that. I shouldn't have eaten that, but I did, and I washed it down with a Coke, and I ate all my fries, too, and then got the hot fudge sundae. Well, that really is going overboard, but if you do find yourself in a moment of weakness, once that's done, it's done.
Yeah, now, blow it off. Just move on.
What are you going to do between then and your next feeding period? Are you going to get in any physical exercise at all whatsoever? And then also think, well, I need to eat dinner tonight. Am I going to sit down and eat a loaf of bread with some bologna and cheese and wash it down with a Shasta? Or am I going to grill some chicken and maybe some squash, zucchini with some mushrooms, and asparagus and a salad, and let's skip the crackers, let's skip the croutons, let's stick just to fresh vegetables and a source of lean protein.
There you go. That sounds good. Well, let me give you an example of what you're talking about. Last night after an activity, my wife and son, we were driving home. They wanted to go to McDonald's. Now, I hate McDonald's, but okay. So they want to go to McDonald's. And what did I do? I pigged out. I had French fries and I had a chocolate shake because I can't eat anything with buns. I can't eat any bread because of my celiac disease. But today, my lunch was an apple, six baby carrots, and two glasses of water. And I eat four or five times a day, so I made up for it today. I think one of the keys is eating several small meals four or five times a day. I kind of graze all day. Every 2 or 3 hours I'm eating something, but it's very light. Like I said, my lunch was an apple and six baby carrots.
Well, what I found, and this may be true for others, I know I've seen references to it in other places, the easiest meals to change or to have any versatility in are going to be breakfast and lunch.
And that's true.
There's evidently several reasons for that, but usually dinner is a routine, and it's usually a home cooked meal in some occasions, or it's a regular restaurant that you go to, and it's a routine of what you do for dinner. Dinner is supposedly the harder meal of the day to change. This is what I do. When I get up in the morning, no matter how early I get up, I'm always rushed until I get to the office. I don't care if I'm 30 minutes early, I feel rushed.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a routine that I go through in the mornings. And before I head out the door, I grab a protein shake. I grab a small bag of mixed almonds, cashews, walnuts, pecans, things of that nature.
That's good.
I grab a piece of string cheese and two bottles of water. And sometimes if I'm lucky enough to have pre-planned, I'll have my own a few strips of my own homemade jerky. And so the protein shake is for breakfast. And then around 10 o'clock, I say, you know, I probably better eat a little something. So I have some of those almonds, another bottle of water, and maybe a
nice ringtone.
Yeah. I like that. That came across loud and clear, didn't it?
It's okay. That's one.
Can you hear that one too?
I don't like that one.
Yeah, that's my work phone.
Oh, that's your work phone.
Yeah, can we pause this for just a moment?
Yeah.
All right. Ready?
Yeah, brief pause there, folks. You know, John's like me. He's a busy guy, donates his time to bring good information like this to you, the listener. So I kind of forgot where we were.
Well, I was talking about my daily routine as far as meals go.
Oh, yeah.
I said protein shake for breakfast, light snack around 10 o'clock. Light lunch normally consists of either a salad or another protein shake. And then for dinner, in between lunch and dinner, I have another light snack, usually some kind of fruit and maybe some jerky. Again, lots of water. And then for dinner, you know, something very sensible. Usually any protein source that you're going to be eating, whether it be lean pork, beef, chicken, they say that one serving is about the size of a deck of playing cards.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
What happens is initially, if you're used to eating a lot more than that, there's no simple solution. You're going to be a little bit hungry. But as you get used to the routine, plus you're supplementing yourself throughout the day, like you said, a series of small meals instead of three large ones.
Yeah, I want to interject something about this. One of the things that I found that helps is when I start to get hungry, I just drink two full glasses of water. And that typically takes a little bit of the edge off of my hunger for an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Yeah, it does. It helps a lot. Also, what I found, almonds helped me a whole lot. Almonds, walnuts, cashews, pecans. You know, don't sit there and chug the whole can.
No, they're high in fat.
But good fat, though.
Yeah, it's good fat, and that's true. Those are good, and they're natural. And,
you know, try to steer away from the Cheetos, the tortilla chips. You know, I don't have a huge problem with sweets, but I always had a problem with pretzels, potato chips, the ideal snack we call Texas Trash.
Yeah.
You know, or Chex Mix. Those were my vices. But anyway, that's the kind of thing I get into. And then as soon as I'm off the clock, as soon as I get off the clock, ahead of the house, peel out of that monkey uniform, put on my workout clothes, and hit the treadmill or hit the track, get that in, clean up, have a nice simple dinner, and then relax the rest of the evening. Try to get at least 7 hours of sleep a night.
That's important too. You know, all this is just basically living a healthy lifestyle, and it's going to help you be in better shape to fight.
You know, that 7 to 8 hours of sleep allows your body to heal.
Yep.
Allows your mind to rest. So it's all important, and it all plays in. You know, I'm not saying that you can't go out with your significant other, be it your girlfriend, your wife, and enjoy a dinner and a glass of wine or something. What I'm saying is, you know, don't go to the Sack and Pack or 7-Eleven on a Sunday afternoon and grab a 12-pack and come back home and watch TV and down that 12-pack.
Yep.
Beer in general is just, one beer is not a problem. Two is probably okay. But once you start, drinking quite a few, even if you don't get intoxicated, your body is going to grasp on to those calories. Wine is not usually a problem. I used to have a running gag. You know, have you ever seen a fat wino? But quite honestly, knowing, and Gabe brought this up, and I thought it was pretty funny. A true man, a true warrior knows what wine goes with what meals.
That's true.
that's pretty cool. The adult beverages, the worst kind of discipline in the world is self-discipline. If you can't discipline yourself, then how do you expect to instill discipline in a child?
Well, that's true. Let me say something about discipline, because you hit on a very good point, John. So many people who listen to this show and others like it, so many of us are disciplined when it comes to firearms training. You know, we put a lot of hours in, we spend a lot of money on ammo, we spend a lot of money on classes or competition matches and what have you. Why not put that same amount of discipline in hours and money into improving your health and getting fit? Because I think that's probably going to pay off just as much as your firearms training.
I believe so. What it does for me is it improved my whole outlook. And if I say one more time, so check this out. I'm 43 years old. I've been married going on 26 years.
Congratulations.
I have got a 19-year-old son who graduates this month. Of course, you're aware of my daughter and what went on there, but she was the oldest. But I've had a pretty good life.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a home that some people would be envious of. I've got nice toys. I've got nice vehicles. But the material things aren't what gives you happiness.
Absolutely not.
Okay. I enjoy my toys. If I didn't enjoy them, I wouldn't have them. But those toys are not the focal point of my life.
Nope.
I'm a Christian. And so my belief is in God and in Jesus Christ.
Me too. Now,
what that does for me is it helps give me balance. So when you look at the entire picture of what makes John happy, what makes John feel well, and happiness overall doesn't mean that you're always going to be overjoyed.
No, it doesn't.
Part of it is, how do I deal with adversity? But what I've got going on here is, I've got my faith, and I've got my family, and I've got my health. Now, with those things in good shape, and my body in good physical condition, and my mind being right, who do you think a turd's going to pick on first? Someone that is fat, sloth, eyes to the ground, completely unaware of what's going on around them? Or are they going to pick on somebody that, that guy looks like he's in shape, he's aware, I'm not real sure I want to jump on him?
Yeah, John, you just hit the nail on the head right there. The reason you need to be fit to fight is so that you don't make yourself a victim, or you're not as likely to be a victim as someone who's who's way out of shape. That's a very, very good point.
I have responded to a call where a young man was about 6'5" and 350 pounds, got robbed. And I don't mean stolen. I mean robbed as an aggravated robbery by a girl that's about 5'3" and 130 pounds.
Wow.
She stuck a knife up to his back and relieved him of his wallet and left him there to cry. He was wearing flip-flops and gym shorts, and let's just call it a Metallica t-shirt because I think that'd be funny. but he was not fit any shape, form, or fashion. He looked soft. He walked soft. And he made himself a target. She had a habit that she felt like she needed money to fix. And she had the mindset that he was food and he was going to be eaten. Now, the reason I say this is because I figured out on my own after, and I think you and I have talked about this before, early in my law enforcement career working in county corrections, I took over a dorm for the night shift. And right after the count cleared and they were free to watch TV, everyone started going back to their bunks and taking off their flip-flops and putting on tennis shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, I didn't know what to make of that. I just, being observant, thought, huh, that's kind of strange. And then they started fighting. And I figured out, wow, you can't fight in slides. You can't fight in flip-flops.
Not very easily.
So, you know, they went and put on shoes so they could duke it out. And me, being a smart young man, said, you know, I think I'll get on the radio and call it a fight in progress and wait till they get tired before I intervene. But so part of the process is not making yourself out to be a victim, not making yourself out to be not making yourself out to be prey, so to speak.
Well, you mentioned it earlier, not making yourself a soft target.
Exactly. Now, here's another issue with that. I have been with some folks that were insecure but wanted to give the impression that they were very secure in themselves, they almost had, well, it was a very cocky attitude. And so we go into a convenience store, and there's a couple of guys that look kind of thuggish. Well, my attitude is I walk in, I make eye contact with them, nod of the head, and I go on about my business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I recognize you. I think you recognize me. And we're going to leave it at that. What I don't do is eyeball them the whole time I'm in there with my chest puffed out as a challenge.
Yeah, that's just, you know, inflating your ego and not necessary.
Well, what I have found is the banty roosters are usually the last ones to really want to fight. They'll puff out their chest, they'll spread their feathers, and they'll make a lot of noise.
And then when the fight starts, they're bailing.
They're gone.
They're out of there.
They got someplace they got to be.
That's true. Yeah, that's so true.
So there's a difference between confidence and bravado.
Well, and that's a real good point. On that note, John, I want to kind of keep it there's more that we need to talk about. Maybe we can do that as a part two, but I want to kind of keep this as short as possible. But you've covered some really good stuff here.
But you know, what I want to stress is, once again, see your physician. That's the first thing I did.
Doc, that's a good point.
What do I need to do? Where do I need to be? What can I do safely?
That's a very good point.
Then you begin your program. Small steps. You know, if you have not been active in a long time, don't think that you're just going to jump back on that bicycle and do a 40-mile loop.
Yeah, no, don't jump into it too much at once.
And as men and a lot of guys, as type A personalities, our first tendency is to jump in and overdo it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you didn't get in the condition you're in overnight,
and you won't get out of it overnight. That's right.
Okay, so and the other thing is the positive mental attitude. Realize where you are. Look at where you can make improvements, and then work on it. only the foolish man will work on things, only the things that he's good at.
Oh, that's good.
If you want to improve at any discipline at all whatsoever, whether it be any kind of martial art, archery, shooting, a handgun, shotgun, rifle, the only way you improve is to work on the things that you're not good at.
That's true. Work on what you're not good at. Work on, because that's, you know, obviously if you stay in your comfort zone, it's just like firearms training. You got to work on what you're not good at, and if you only stay in your comfort zone, you're not going to improve.
Comfort zones are just as dangerous as gun-free zones.
Ooh, good point. Good. Hey, that's pretty good. You made that one up on the fly, and that sounded great.
Straight up, it's noteworthy.
That's very good. That's very good. John, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
And Bob, thank you. I appreciate you bringing this topic up, and I'm glad that if I can give anybody any kind of help or motivation like I was given, you know, it really has improved my quality of life. It's improved. Well, it's improved everything, and you know, I wish that everyone would have the opportunities that I've had to be successful and to just have a good life. That's the whole point of even being here, is to enjoy yourself.
Yeah, amen to that. Take a couple minutes to talk about your upcoming classes.
Oh, do I have to, Bob?
Yeah, you don't have to if you don't want to.
Yeah, I don't mind at all. Hey, I got a close-range gunfighting coming up in Houston, Texas, May 18th and 19th. There's only one or two spots left in that class. I think it'll go to a waiting list very soon. In September, I've got a rifle gunfighting class that I'm doing at the Impact Zone in Houston. That is a lot of fun. It is a physical class. It is going to be in September. Hopefully it won't be too hot, but, you know, whenever we're training, the weather is perfect. I used to say the weather was outstanding because we were outstanding in the rain, outstanding in the snow, outstanding in the heat. But, you know, I've got that. I've got an advanced close-range gunfighting coming to San Antonio with you, Bob.
Yes, advanced close-range gunfighting.
We're looking at adding a point-shooting gunfight skills to the calendar. And we're trying to decide on whether it's going to be in Orange, Texas or in Houston, Texas. And I'm working really hard to bring back Roger Phillips in 2014. Roger is one of those guys that has been a big motivator to me and a fine example. And the courses he teaches with the point shooting progressions and advanced point shooting progressions and long gun point shooting progressions there's no way to come up with a title that would accurately describe everything that you do in those courses. If you came up with a title that really did describe exactly what you learned to do, people wouldn't believe it.
That's true. Good. Well, I have no doubt you will fill up those classes. And John, thanks again for donating your time.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, Bob. Thank you for having me. If anyone has any questions on what they can do for beginning physical fitness or how they can improve the warrior lifestyle, they really need to check out Warrior Talk. We have a whole forum dedicated to basically good living and physical fitness. We don't just sit there and talk about pistols, shotguns, rifles, and knives. We talk about how to become more successful, how to enjoy what the Lord has given us.
Yep, check that forum out. I've read parts of it, and it's good stuff. Take care, John. Shoot straight and shoot safe, okay?
Same to you, brother. Be good.
Thanks. Well, John, thank you very much. Very informative. Thank you for your time. You know, people donate their time on this podcast to bring you some good stuff, so I'd appreciate it if you would maybe shoot him a quick email or something like that if you'd like. John is on the forum. He's on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum, so you can get on there. You can find him and just go through the threads. There'll be a thread on this show, and John will probably be chiming in, answering questions and things like that. I'm jealous. I've lost some weight significantly lately, but I need to get back into the gym with more regularity and start working out some more. So, John, you've motivated me, and hopefully you've motivated several several thousand people every month who listen to this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for all the wonderful emails and Facebook messages. As you know, my wife and family and I were dealing with a very, very difficult time right now. My wife got a diagnosis of ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's disease. And, well, you Google it and you figure it out. There's no cure for Lou Gehrig's disease. And it's a fatal disease. So we are still praying for God's miracle to heal my wife, and hopefully that will happen. It's a tough time, folks, and it's going to get tougher and tougher, but I am determined to continue to do this podcast and an occasional training class. Thank you so much for all the wonderful support that you guys have been giving me. It means a lot. It means a lot that you guys are thinking of me. It really does. It perks me up. I have good days and I have bad days. My wife has good days and bad days. I tell my wife about all the great support and the prayers and everything that's coming out there. So thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Keep it up. Every one of them I read and every one of them warms my heart. With that said, folks, thank you very much for tuning in to yet another episode of Your Weekly Handgun World Podcast. I'm Bob Main. I'm your host. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Remember that the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Talk to you next week. Goodbye.